Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Chandler Holt.
We are recording this on Tuesday, April 9th. I had to count the months really quick because it's been a long season and it's coming to an end. This will be our final podcast of the regular season for the Utah Jazz. And barring something really unexpected, no postseason for the Utah Jazz either. So, yeah, this will be the last in-season podcast for the Utah Jazz. Three games we'll look back on the last week. Of course, we'll look at what's coming up before the Jazz close the season. Four games to be played this week. Some news that has hit, including some off-season plans for the Utah Jazz. We'll give our Jazz grades, keep an eye on the standings, and then we will answer your mailbag questions, as we always do, and I will admit is my favorite part of the podcast. Before we jump into all of that, make sure to follow us on Twitter, X, whatever, at KSL Sports, at Ben's Hoops, at Chandler Holt KSL. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook at KSL Sports as well. Read us at KSLSports.com, and you can subscribe to the Jazz Notes newsletter, which comes out every Tuesday with some early information that you won't find anywhere else. All right, Chandler, where do we start with last week?
Yeah, another winless week for the Jazz. The losing streak is now up to 12, the third longest in team history.
Have we recorded four straight weeks without the Jazz winning?
I think so.
It's like the 15th. They beat the Atlanta Hawks.
It's been a long time. But yeah, last week started off with a 129-113 loss to Cleveland, followed that up with a 131-102 blowout loss to the Clippers, and then another 118-110 loss to Golden State. Even though that was 8 points, it felt a little bit bigger than it actually was.
It was 20 for a lot of the
games. Yes, exactly. Let me just go through this. Jazz shoot 48% in the first game, 38% in the second game, back up to 47% in the third game, but outscored 40-25 in the first quarter against the Cavs, 41-16 against the Clippers, and 41-28 against Golden State. All three teams put up 40 points in the first quarter.
Yeah, and I guess the big event was that Will Hardy benched the Jazz rookies for most of the first half against the Clippers, didn't start them to open the third quarter, kind of sent it a message to Keontae George, Taylor Hendricks, and Bryce Sensabaugh that they have to play bigger than themselves and have to give a better effort, which they've traditionally shown in the third quarter but haven't been able to get off the mat to open games. That's an important part of being a starter and wanting to earn those minutes, and I think there's a real chance that both Keontae George and Taylor Hendricks are starters next year.
Yes.
If they're back, and I would assume most, if not all, the rookies are going to be back next season. So if you can't start quickly, it's going to be really hard to play, and maybe you don't deserve to start. So I think that was pretty controversial for Jazz fans, but I think you understand the reasoning there. They're not set up to succeed at all, and it would help a lot if they had veterans. So it's a really difficult needle to thread that the Jazz and Will Hardy are trying to do, which is instill in these guys that winning matters and that losing is supposed to hurt, while trying to lose as many games as possible because you want to hopefully, maybe, catch the Memphis Grizzlies and actually get the 7th pick in the draft, which I thought was a very long shot. Still is, but I didn't know if they would catch Brooklyn, and they skated past Brooklyn. Really made that look pretty easy. So we will see. We'll talk about that more coming up in the standings. Otherwise, yeah, just another disastrous week for the Jazz, and not a lot to take away from it.
Yeah, speaking of no veterans, no Markkanen and no Clarkson in the past week. And I was looking at, we'll get into our Jazz grades later, I was doing some notes on this. The only veterans I have notes for are Colin Sexton and Yurt Seven.
Yeah, did John Collins play?
No.
The last week at all? So no Clarkson. No, we know Lowry's done for the year. Haven't had that officially ruled out for either John Collins or Jordan Clarkson. We'll see if maybe they play in one of the two final home games. They're not playing tonight against Denver, but maybe Houston on Thursday. But we will see. All right, speaking of which, let's look at the week ahead really quick.
Yeah, a four-game week. A busy last week of the season for the Jazz. Going to start tonight as they host the reigning champion Denver Nuggets. And then last home game of the year on Thursday, hosting the Houston Rockets in Los Angeles to face the Clippers on Friday. And then last game of the year in Golden State on Sunday.
We will address a little bit of this because we got a mailbag question about it. But Houston not playing for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Golden State's not going to be playing for anything. Barring something crazy where they jump up to the 9th spot, which actually has some value in the play-in tournament because they would host that first round game or that play-in tournament game, that first one. But I still think they're probably going to be locked into 10th and probably going to be on the road, maybe at Sacramento, maybe at the Lakers. We will talk about that more coming up. So a couple of teams probably not playing for much, but both Denver and the Clippers on Friday still playing for something.
Yeah, right now Denver sits tied for the first seed in the West, but Minnesota has the tiebreaker, so any wins that they can get will be big.
Yeah, playing the Jazz is a good good thing to do right now if you're one of these teams. Clippers are happy about it. Golden State's probably happy about it. Denver's happy about it. Rockets don't care. All right, weekly news. What's going on with the Utah Jazz?
Yeah, just one piece of weekly news just came out earlier today. Actually, the Jazz announced the 2024 Salt Lake Summer League. It's back. And if I'm not wrong, same teams as last year. You have the Jazz, of course, Memphis Grizzlies, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the 76ers.
Yeah, kind of exciting. I mean, I'm a huge Summer League. I'm a sicko, so I like Summer League basketball. I love that it's in my backyard. I love that we can go and sit close to the action. And that's always fun. Those four teams, particularly, I mean, there's five first-round picks between them. I don't think we're going to see five first-round draft picks from this year's draft because I don't think the Jazz are going to make two. I could be totally wrong. That's just my guess. I said they wouldn't make three last year, and they did. But the Jazz have two. The Grizzlies are going to have a top 10 pick because they've been awful this year. The Thunder are going to have, like, the 12th pick owed to them from Houston. Mm-hmm. So they've got a lottery pick. And then Philadelphia is going to be like 16 or 17. And if they miss the playoffs, which is possible because of the play-in tournament, they could get a lottery pick. So we might end up with four of those five lottery picks. And like I said, the Jazz are currently projected to have 27. So there's going to be talent here. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the Salt Lake City Summer League is that all four games or three games every night, because there's four teams playing, generally have two teams playing. Two games a night, four teams playing, generally have some fun. And all three nights is what I'm trying to say, has interesting matchups. So it's fun to watch.
It's going to be on July 8th, 9th, and 10th. Tickets go on sale in May. And I suggest you should go out there if you can. Like, you can see Chet Holmgren get seven blocks or whatever else it is, see some future talent.
I'm curious why they moved it back. I'll have to ask some people, because usually they play the third, they take the fourth off, and then they play the fifth and the sixth, and then Summer League in Vegas starts on like the 9th or 10th. Vegas Summer League starts on the 12th, so they moved everything back a little bit.
Gotcha.
So usually they don't play that first week. I'm curious if the Olympics have something to do with that. Maybe they're trying to give, but that they're getting closer to the Olympics and not further away.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why they would do it that way. I'll have to ask some people.
You want to get into our grades?
Yeah, let's do it.
Every week we give the Jazz grades on the past week, somewhat encompassing the whole season, on veterans, young player standings, and fun factor. First up, let's talk about the vets.
Which ones?
Exactly.
Yeah, nobody played. Only Colin Sexton?
Yeah, basically, Colin Sexton had 19-7 in the first game. Terrible, 12-2 in the second game on 21% shooting.
Yeah.
Yurt 7, he hasn't been consistent with his minutes all year, but has got on the floor for all three games. Had some decent games, 11-6 on 50% in the first game, 12-7 on 60% in the second game. But I'm thinking like a D+, C-.
Yeah, statistically, this might be the worst we've seen Colin Sexton play all year, in all honesty. I mean, these three games, 15 points, 32% from the floor, 30% from three, four turnovers a game, like, and he's got the worst plus-minus on the team. Pretty uncharacteristic for Colin. Now, he has also had to shoulder being in that starting lineup with the three rookies, and that's hurting him. And, you know, it's not an indication of who he's been this year. I think he's been fabulous, and when we do our end-of-season awards, I'll be curious how we kind of rank Colin Sexton. But, yeah, D. Omer Yurtseven, the next time he rotates to block a shot at the rim will be the first. He just doesn't feel it. There's a reason the Jazz pick-and-roll defense has been terrible, and some of it is the rookies. Unless the Jazz are just saying, yeah, Omer, your only job is to defend the corner three, which I would be very surprised as the only seven-footer actively playing, he's not rotating. Mm-mm. So he's not been very good this year. Unfortunately, I kind of thought maybe he'd have a little bit more to offer, but there have been some issues there. Yeah, outside of the 10 points and 7 rebounds, there's been some defensive lapses. So, yeah, D. Yeah, I think at best a D for the veterans for the Jazz.
Next up for the young players. Overall, kind of a rough week for the young guys as well, but there were some highlights. Hendricks in the game against the Cavs, he puts up 18 on 54% shooting. That was a great game. Sensabaugh has 22-7 on 57% shooting. And then against the Warriors, Keontae George has 25 points on 50% shooting. And then Johnny Juzang leads the Jazz with 27 points on 75%.
Let's talk about the three main rookies first.
Yes.
Keontae George had a terrible week and finally snapped out of it in the fourth quarter against the Warriors. I'll be curious if that carries over tonight against the Nuggets. He could use some positive momentum to close the season. I've asked him about it a little bit. He doesn't seem all that shook by it. And then you've got to determine, like, should he be? Like, or is it better that he's just like, this is part of the game. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have my lows, but I'm also going to have my highs, and I'm trying to get back to having more consistent highs. Or should he be more damaged by having this last week? I guess it's better that he doesn't just fold in and collapse on himself publicly.
True.
Bryce Sensabaugh, again, Bryce and Taylor Hendricks, the nice thing is that even when they're playing poorly, you can see, like, man, they are shooting the heck out of the ball. Mm-hmm. Bryce Sensabaugh, 52% from the floor, 58% from three. And then Taylor Hendricks, 52% from the floor, 61% from three. Like, suddenly, even when these guys aren't playing that well, you realize, like, man, if they just kind of get it, if they just learn like how to play, they can play.
Yes.
They just got to learn like where it fits, what the NBA game is about. But man, those dudes can certainly play. Like Taylor Hendricks can really play. He's timid. He's pretty quiet. He's got to get more demonstrative, I think, and that'll come next year when he gets like a bigger opportunity to have the ball in his hands, and we'll see that more. But they can play. I know Keontae George can play. I saw him for the first 60 games of the season shoot 36% from the floor and 40% from three and actually be a pretty good passer. And he's got to learn how to play defense and he's got to care about that. That's going to be the big thing for Keontae going forward. But like all of these guys can play. So I think there's still some benefits there, but I'm not going to give them a good grade. They got benched on Friday.
Yes.
But to be fair, Johnny Juzang was awesome. And I actually think Johnny Juzang's an NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't make him a starter. I don't think he's a top seven player. I saw somebody tweeted at me and said, like, that's a 10th man on a rotation. It's like, great. Yeah, 10th man is really good. 10th man plays in the regular season. I don't know if they play in the postseason, but he's big. He's really shooting the ball well. He's got a pretty good attitude. And you know what? 4.5 rebounds and 2 assists also. It's not like he's just a shooter. He does a little bit more than that. So good for him. You know what? I'm going to give Johnny an A because he's turned himself into an NBA player really over the last three games. Like, he's going to get another contract. He's restricted with the Jazz, whether it's here or someone says, like, he's Jordan Nwora, who was with the Bucks and is now with the Toronto Raptors. Like, those guys stick around in the league, and maybe he can find a spot where he turns into Sam Merrill is, like, the perfect situation for him. So Johnny Juzang gets an A. Rest of the players get, like, a C, even though the shooting percentages are good. So I'll say C+.
C+.
I'm not sure Johnny Juzang is good enough to boost them to a B grade, but yeah, I'll give him a C+.
Next up, standings. Three straight losses. Again, we're at the point where losses are better for the Jazz than wins. And they claimed the 8th worst record. Last episode, they were a half game away, but now they officially have it. A.
Yeah, A+. Good for you guys.
Yep.
You keep losing games and you keep increasing those draft odds. 26% chance of moving up into the top four, which I know this is not a great draft. You still rather pick 4th or 3rd or 2nd or 1st than you would 8th, but even, man, I mean, 8th is better than what they had last year.
Yes.
They had the 9th pick last season. Of course, they could get jumped in the lottery and still fall back to 9th, but we'll see. But, yeah, you want losses, you got them.
Next up, fun factor. Like I said, closest game was 8 points, even though that was much more of a blowout than it was. No Markkanen or Clarkson, which are arguably two of the top three most fun players to watch on the Jazz roster. I have a D.
I'm going to just go F.
Yeah, it was
an F. It's not fun. This has not been a fun stretch to watch at all. I mean, it's the worst stretch of basketball the Jazz have played since they began. Their first 37 games in existence as a franchise, they went 3-34. This is their next worst stretch. 50 years apart, separated, but this is their next worst stretch. It's been pretty abysmal. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will look at the standings overall, and then we will get into your questions and your mailbag. Stick around. More Jazz Notes coming up next. Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. All right, before we get to the mailbag questions, we teased addressing the standings. The Jazz currently have the 12th worst record in the West, the 8th worst record overall. But, Chandler, they are not out of the running to potentially catch up to the 7th worst team in the league, which is the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, they're only 2 games back from them, and now they're 1.5 games ahead of Brooklyn, who have the 9th worst record. And 12-game losing streak is the longest in the NBA. Do you think that they can catch the Grizzlies? The Grizzlies do have a game against the Spurs.
Yeah, the Jazz, I expect the Jazz to lose out.
Mm-hmm.
There's still potential for a win, maybe even 2, but they've lost 12 in a row. I don't think they're going to win 2 games of their final 4 when they're not trying to win specifically. But looking at the Grizzlies' schedule, as you mentioned, they still have the Spurs, which, by the way, has just not become, it's not been a gimme.
Yes.
I'll be curious if San Antonio shuts down Victor and just says, like, we get it. He's won Rookie of the Year.
Yes.
He's going to be one of the 10 best players in the league maybe as soon as next season. Like, he's arrived. He's here. He's going to be a monster as long as he's healthy. The Cavs are a mess. The Lakers are still going to be trying to win. I bet you Denver. I mean, maybe Denver has shut it down the last game of the season if that is decided. Like, if they beat San Antonio tonight, you're hoping that the league is decided where the final standings are going to be and Denver can't move on the final game of the season. They shut it down. And maybe Memphis wins 2 games. Highly unlikely, but not out of the realm of possibility. I'd say it's like a 10% chance. All the projection models say the Jazz are going to finish with the 8th worst record, but
yes,
something to keep an eye on. Tonight, if Memphis beats San Antonio, I think it becomes a lot more realistic. If Memphis loses at home to San Antonio, no chance.
Yeah. You want to get into the mailbag?
Let's do it. As always, find us on Twitter at Ben's Hoops, at Chandler Holt KSL, at KSL Sports. We always send out this prompt every Tuesday to send in your mailbag questions. We got a lot. I always love that people respond because it's my favorite part of the segment. And then we write up the article as well. So it creates a lot of work, but good work for us.
First up from Jake Hatch, if the Utah Jazz are going to snap their losing streak before the end of the season, not likely, which game is the best bet for them to do it?
It's got to be Houston or Golden State. Obviously, those are the two worst teams that the Jazz still face because, as we mentioned, the Nuggets and the Clippers are still fighting for something. Houston really isn't playing for anything anymore, but I do think they want to continue to see like what they've got in Jalen Green, who has bounced, who's dropped off. Now, Houston, after that great winning streak, I think they've lost four in a row. Like, Houston has collapsed, and now that they're not playing for anything, that becomes a very winnable game, especially in the final home game of the season for the Jazz. If Jordan Clarkson comes out, and I think it might be the last time we see Jordan Clarkson, just speculation, if he can play, if he's healthy, and the Jazz want to give him a chance to get a farewell from Jazz fans, Jordan could go off for 40 and win that game.
Yeah.
He's that good of a player, and the Rockets could mail it in. I don't know if Fred VanVleet's going to play. I don't know if Dylan Brooks is going to play, but like we said, they're not playing for anything. And then if Golden State has no opportunity to climb in the standings in the final game of the season, everybody probably rests so they don't risk a rolled ankle for Draymond or Steph or Clay or whoever. Right now, looking at the NBA standings, the Golden State Warriors are 1.5 games back of the Lakers, 2 games back of the Sacramento Kings. My guess is the Lakers jump the Kings before the end of the season. Lakers have a pretty cushy schedule the rest of the way. So they would need some help from Sacramento losing a couple of games, but I don't think Golden State's playing anybody. I don't know if Houston's going to be playing anybody. So it's one of those two games, and I would say probably Houston.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think the Jazz are going to go and put on this brilliant performance in the final game of the season on the road at the Chase Center in Golden State.
I was about to say, it's probably Houston just because it is at home.
Yep.
Next up from Jake the Lynx, what are the realistic chances that the Jazz are any better next year, or do we have another season to look forward that looks how the last couple months have?
It's not going to look how the last couple of months have, yes. I don't think. Here's the problem. Like, is Minnesota going to be bad next year?
I could see them having sort of a Kings drop-off but still being successful.
They're still going to be good. Like, Anthony Edwards is still there. Rudy Gobert is still good. Mike Conley's still good. Like, they might have to trade Karl-Anthony Towns if they lose in the first round. That's a lot of money. They're going to be in that second apron. They're going to try and unload some money, but they're better than the Jazz next year.
Yes.
Is Denver going to be good next year?
Yes.
Is Oklahoma City going to be good next year?
Yes.
Clippers probably. Like, Kawhi is signed long-term. Paul George is a major question mark. Russ is trailing off quickly. I don't know if the Clippers are going to be good next year. Like, actually, that's a weird older team that the Jazz could randomly jump if the Jazz add some talent. Is Dallas going to be good next year? Well, they've got Luka Doncic. Phoenix, they can't do anything, but they still have Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal.
Yeah,
like,
they
that's
still have the talent.
Better than the Jazz. New Orleans, maybe they fall back. Like, they've been relatively healthy this year. They could have to make some trades if things fall apart. Sacramento, maybe they're not good. Lakers are still going to be good. Like, LeBron's going to sign a deal. They're going to try and trade for Donovan Mitchell or Trae Young this offseason. They're going to be good. Golden State's old, still in the conversation. I mean, the Jazz were already knocking on the door for Golden State. Here's the problem, though. Memphis won 27 games this year. Memphis gets Ja back next year. They get Desmond Bane back next year. They had a top 10 pick. Yeah, Memphis is going to be really good again next year. Houston looks like they're good. I mean, Houston had that stretch. Maybe they're not. Maybe that was fool's gold. Maybe Jalen Green doesn't put it together. But we just named, off the top of my head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that are good.
Yep.
And the Jazz aren't even in that conversation yet. And that's to make no mention of the Spurs, who have a freak in Victor Wembanyama, with all due respect, who could single-handedly be better than the Jazz next season. Like, Jazz could be good, better, and still be the 12th best team in the West. Like, that's actually kind of the danger of where the Jazz are suddenly, is this is how you get into this loop of you're just waiting for old teams to get old, but all the other young teams have jumped you. It gets really difficult to make the playoffs. So, you know, we did this to begin this season, and I think we went through this exact process of, like, do the Jazz make the playoffs? And I thought very firmly the Jazz were the 11th best team in the West. Now, I didn't project Memphis falling off. I didn't project some of these teams jumping up and being good. Like, I don't think I expected the Pelicans to get there, or maybe I thought the Kings would fall back. But, yeah, all these teams are good, and the Jazz aren't one of them.
Yep.
So they've got a lot of work to do this offseason if they want to get better. So I don't think they want to be this bad next year, but some of it might be out of their control. And, again, if it's a better draft next season and you're going into the trade deadline and you've got the 11th pick that's going to go to Oklahoma City, or you can trade away a couple of veterans not named Lauri Markkanen that are going to get you another top 10 pick in a much better draft than you have this season, and they've shown a willingness to do it 2 years in a row. Like, very realistically, this could happen again next season.
Yes, absolutely. And this goes into the next question from the Great Bambus. Is it possible for the Jazz to tank next season for a top draft pick with Lauri still on the roster? If so, how do you think they go about doing that?
The same way they would do it this year.
Yes.
Not from the opening jump. I don't think they have the ability to do that. They don't think they can do it. The people I've talked to who are in the know over there at the Jazz know that as long as Lowry's on the team, they're too good to tank.
Yes.
Like, he's too good. He's going to win you 18 games a year, and the rest of the guys are going to count for 8 wins a year, and that's how you get to 29 where the Jazz are right now. Like, one other guy randomly wins you a game. So, and the rookies are going to get a little bit better. So, as long as Lowry's on the team, they can't get worse. And actually, I think John Collins is going to be better next year. I'm not saying there's no path for the Jazz to make the playoffs. Like, there absolutely is a path where all these things click in, they add talent, they make a trade, they sign somebody, and all of a sudden they have 48 minutes of really good basketball. That's really possible. But the scenario where the Jazz rebuild but can't get to the bottom is realistic if they don't trade Lauri Markkanen.
Next up from Jake, do you think the value of the Jazz's early second round pick might inflate a little bit because of the 2-day draft? Teams might talk themselves into a player in between rounds.
I've been meaning to ask Justin Zanuck and Danny Ainge about this, and I haven't had the chance to talk to Danny much this year, but it's pretty interesting. You've got the second pick of the second round right now. That number one pick, I think, is going to be more valuable because it's a little bit higher and it's the one everybody wants, but you know, maybe, who is it, Detroit has that pick? They've all been traded. That's the hard part, is right now all these picks are getting traded all over the place. But if you look at the draft order for 2024, yeah, it's pretty interesting, especially if you have the 28th pick already. Right now, Toronto's going to have that pick. Well, Toronto's bad, so they might want to hold on to it.
Yeah.
The Jazz probably don't want to be bad and don't want to be young. So, yeah, that pick probably gets pretty interesting for a contender. Like, you know, Denver does have a pick this year, I think. Boston has a pick this year. But some of these teams that don't want to spend a bunch of money and think, well, we want to get a guy who we had a first-round grade on, but because he's a second-rounder, we can actually sign him to a two-way deal and not just get absolutely annihilated by that second apron. Like, those picks become way more valuable to good teams than they do the Jazz. So, yeah, like, the Clippers don't have a first-round pick this year, I don't think. That's a team that could want a second-round pick. Dallas owes their pick to New York this year. Remember, that's why they tanked last year to get the top 10 pick to hold on to it. Dallas could say, man, we've got a guy that we love, had him graded 20th. He falls to 32, and we had a whole night to think about, like, how to execute that trade. Yeah, I think the value does go up.
No, definitely. I think the two-day draft makes the 31st to 35th pick more valuable, because I think there probably will be teams who didn't get exactly what they wanted in the first round, and then they're like, okay, we can still snag this guy at 33rd or whatever.
And the Jazz can get some value out of it. Like, the Jazz will continue to kick cans down the road. Like, or maybe you just trade the 32nd pick for 3 more future second-round picks. Like, they might do that, and that's the type of value this have. They're not going to get a future first for it, but you might be able to trade it for 3, maybe even 4 second-rounders, like something crazy like that for a team that is desperate. Phoenix is a really good example, right? Phoenix, like, wants to add talent, has a young roster, needs a win-now guy, and goes and says, well, who's the Trace Jackson Davis that Golden State's relying on? Who's the 4-year senior that's good and can help now? Like, Zach Edey or whatever. Like, there's a team out there that's going to be like, oh, man, can't believe he's still sitting on the board, and they'll make that trade. So, yeah, I think it does help. I'm excited. I need to ask, though, the front office how they viewed it, because maybe there's a weird negative I haven't thought of because I'm not as intelligent as they are.
Next up from Nate Mendenhall, what do you think is the best use of the starting / rotation minutes left in these final games? Do you agree with the overdunked Oreo analogy, and are there any downsides to max minutes for the rookies?
I do think you can send rookies off into the offseason playing poorly and be like, oh man, they're washed, and if they get hurt because of how you're playing, that's bad. But as we mentioned in our grades, like, even though Bryce Sensabaugh hasn't been great and Taylor Hendricks hasn't been, like, awesome, those shooting percentages are really good. Like, Bryce is happy about his shots going in because there was a stretch there where they stopped going in for, like, 10 straight games. He couldn't shoot at all, and now he's rebounded and he's playing better. So I think it's really beneficial for them. It might be more harmful for Keontae George than it has been for the other two.
Yeah.
I think Keontae George got so used to playing with the veterans, and I'm sure I'm guilty of it too, not recognizing how big of a burden those veterans were shouldering to kind of pave the pathway for him for his life to be easy. Like, I tweeted this out earlier this week. Look at Keontae George's drop off in shooting. It's perfectly coincides with when Jordan Clarkson left the rotation, which makes absolute sense, actually. Jordan Clarkson leaves. The guy who had to focus on Jordan Clarkson because Jordan was number two or number three on the Jazz scouting report outside of Lowry and then probably Colin Sexton. It's probably Jordan just because he shoots a lot. And that's not a negative. The Jazz need him to shoot a lot. All of a sudden, that defender, who was the second best or maybe the best perimeter defender on the team, is now on Keontae. Well, now his life stinks.
Yep.
That's hard. And it's not just one guy. Now, it's not just two guys that the Jazz had. There's only one guy who's taking off the dribble threes. And it's Keontae George, and he has to take them. And we're like, why is he taking these shots? There's a real chance behind the scenes, Will Hardy's saying, like, Keontae, if you don't take that shot, they're never going to guard us beyond the three-point line. And if they don't guard us beyond the three-point line, we can't score at all. So you have to do that. I think there's a lot of those conversations. So it may have hurt Keontae. I think it's helped the other two rookies. And then, as we talked about, like, good for Johnny Juzang. Like, he has used this time to turn himself into a proven NBA commodity that another team is going to come and offer at least the veteran minimum for. Like,
yeah,
he's going to get another NBA guaranteed contract next season.
Going back to not sure how Keontae is taking this, right? If he's getting down on himself or just going through every game as it comes, I think that it's good in the long run, right? Having these better defenders on you, even though you're in your rookie year, you're probably going to get clamped in most situations. You're getting that experience, and I hope that he sees that. That his shooting, of course, it's on him to some degree, but it's also a byproduct of what the Jazz are doing to end the year.
And how everything complements everything.
Yes.
Yep, how everyone helps everybody and where you need that help. And why those veterans, even a guy like Jordan Clarkson, who's shooting 29% from three, and all these fans are like, whoa, why is he even touching the ball? It's like, that's why.
Yep.
Like, honestly, that's why. He's making everybody else's life a lot easier. Now, can you get the type of guard who makes everyone's life easier and then also still shoots 36, 37, 38% from three? That's the next step. And again, it's like this pathway of how do the Jazz get better? It might be that simple of, well, they do 90% of what the veterans already do, but they do it quite literally 10% better from the three-point line, and all of a sudden it really clicks in and Keontae's a contributor and Taylor Hendricks is a contributor versus just like eating up space.
Yeah. Next up from Utah Jazz News, most likely case scenario in which the Jazz get their next number one guy or MVP caliber player, which we need for a championship.
I still think, and this is the one I feel like people talk about the least, it's like randomly hitting with the eighth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I know everyone's like, you got to tank more to get the number one guy. Like, I don't know, Indiana has a guy, Tyrese Halliburton, who was the 11th pick.
Yeah.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was what, like 14 or 17 or something? Like, it happens. Giannis Antetokounmpo was a 16th pick in the draft or whatever. We know that Jokic was a second rounder. Like, that's what happens. Yep. Honestly, that's what happens, is the Jazz randomly have all these swings at the plate and they connect on the 15th pick or the 18th pick or the 7th pick. It's not tank and get a number one overall pick, and it's not, accidentally traded for Kevin Durant. Nobody knew he was going to be Kevin Durant. Like, the Jazz are going to draft their next best player.
Yes.
I would like to say there's another pathway where I see how it gets easy, or they can replicate trading a veteran to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, even Mark Daigneault, the coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, said yesterday, we had no idea Shai was this good. Like, we didn't know he wasn't this good when he got here, and now look at him. Like, he's forged this himself. Good for him. He has done this. We had no idea.
Yeah.
And if they knew, the Clippers never would have traded him.
Exactly.
Because he's better than both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George right now. They never would have traded him. Kawhi wouldn't have demanded that they bring in Paul George. He would have been like, oh, great, the next, an MVP? And me? We're going to win a title. And if they had Shai right now and all those draft picks and Kawhi, they're winning a title.
Yes.
And they messed it up. So in that sense also, you don't want to invest all your draft capital and everything in another star, because you know, you want to have one star, and then you want to have some flexibility to find the other. The Clippers don't have it, and that's the reason this whole window is going to close without them winning a title, which is a pretty monumental collapse. I remember where I was when that trade went down and thinking, like, well, great, Clippers run the league for the next 6 years, and they haven't at all.
Next up from Josh Likes Jazz. Next time the Jazz do a classic uniform, which uniform from Jazz history would you choose?
The white home jersey that they wore during the Stockton Malone era, with the Jazz note. Now, I actually like the white mountain jersey as well, but they haven't done either of those. They've done the purple mountain jersey and they've done the purple note jersey, including the purple New Orleans note jersey, which has the bad J note that actually just looks like the true music note, doesn't have the basketball in it. Actually, my favorite jerseys are the two white mountain jersey and then, more importantly, the purple lettering white home jersey. So I'd hope it would be one of those, but because I have teased that there's going to be new jerseys altogether, I don't know what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
I don't know what the new jerseys are going to look like, but I don't know if they're going to throw in another throwback that quickly.
I agree. I would love to see some White Mountains. Another honorable mention for me would be the Baby Blue from the Darren Williams era.
And you know what's so funny is people hated that jersey.
Yep.
The same reason, like, the next generation of Chandler Holtz that's going to come up that follows the Utah Jazz is going to be like, you know what I'd love to see? Those yellow jerseys were sick. Like, that's going to happen.
Yep.
I don't know what to tell you. It's going to happen. You can hate the yellow jerseys. I don't. I've liked them. Someone's going to be like, dude, those were it. Like, that was it. That was the coolest jersey the Jazz have ever worn. And we will see the yellow jerseys brought back. I'll be curious if we ever see the black and copper jerseys from that same era. Maybe not. But yeah, the blue jerseys people were hated. And then because they hate baby blue as a basketball color, and then they come back.
Yep.
It's just going to happen. But I would expect the next ones we see, again, absolutely zero insight on this, will be either the White Mountain jersey or the 80s, 90s white Jazz Note jersey. Not the ones that they kind of brought back during the Gordon Hayward era, but like really the old ones with the purple lettering. I could see that.
Next up from Craig Wilson, do you like any players projected around 27 in the draft? If Jazz trade the pick, do they trade up for future assets or young talent?
Admittedly, my draft analysis so far has just been watching the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, season ends on Sunday. Monday, I'm putting my draft hat on, and I'm going to dial up. I'm going to watch Kentucky versus whatever other SEC team has three NBA players on it, and I'm going to watch that. And then I'm going to watch them again on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, I'm going to watch UConn because it has five NBA players on it. And I'm going to watch UConn play whatever team. Did they play Duke in some random tournament earlier? I'm going to watch that. And I'm going to watch them for 2 days. And then I'm going to watch Duke and et cetera. I'm just going to go down the list until I've watched 45 players. And I will have a better list of this. And I'm excited to do it. That's part of the job I really enjoy doing. And I'm excited to get into to know that. What I have noticed, I was like watching the game last night. I was like, oh, yeah. Five UConn players aren't going to be drafted number one overall, but one of those kids is going to be available at 27. It's like, well, I could sell myself on that.
Yeah.
I could see why that would work. And you see a kid like Cam Spencer yesterday, who's older and does everything you want, like totally engaged in the game, stealing a term that I like from Coach Tim Lacombe, former BYU assistant, Utah assistant, who does the pre-half and post-game show for the Jazz. Like, he knows what the score is, meaning he's not just playing his game out there. Like, he's playing to win.
Yep.
He's playing because he knows exactly what the scenario is every single possession. Like, that's that kid. So if you can go out and get a Cam Spencer at 27 or 32 and you trade the other pick, awesome. Like, that's a home run, in all honesty. And you look at some of the teams that have had success doing that. Hitting on your late first-round picks is, like, arguably the most important thing you can do once you're already a pretty good team, because it allows you to stay relevant even when you're good and have very little cap space or flexibility. And when the Jazz were good and they whiffed on Jared Butler and they whiffed on Udoka Azubuike, like, those were enormous setbacks that at the time you're like, well, they're already good. Enormous setbacks, because if you could just lose Derek Favors and not have to use a pick to get off of him, and then you had a suitable backup, okay, you're in really good shape. They just never had a good suitable backup, and they never found anybody to, you know, be right in line to take over for Mike Conley if you wanted to trade Mike Conley but keep Donovan Mitchell on the roster. Like, they just didn't have that option, whereas Philadelphia, okay, you got to get rid of James Harden. He's just a bozo. He can't win here. Guess who steps into his spot? Tyrese Maxey, who's better than James Harden. Like, and they got him in the 20s. Like, that's, you have to hit on those picks sometimes. Not all the time, nobody does, but if you get a Christian Brown who can step in and play as a rookie like he did for the Denver Nuggets, he can help you win a title. So those picks are valuable. I don't know who to identify yet.
Yeah, I think that the 25 to 35th pick in the draft is totally forgotten, and there's such a long history of great players being taken in that range. You have Jimmy Butler as the 30th pick, Jalen Brunson 33rd pick, Desmond Bane was the 30th
right.
pick. You can go back and back and back.
Huge, yeah, exactly. Difference makers.
A big one, Derek White was drafted at 29. Like, you have these very high quality role players, and like, I'm not like, of course the Celtics would still be a contender without Derek White, but he's like the keystone of their defense. Like, he's one of the biggest parts of that team. So I think that, yeah, hitting late first round draft picks is essential.
So yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, is it Johnny Furphy from Kansas? Like, I don't know. Is it Tyler Kolek from Marquette? Maybe. But I will watch all of them. I will have a much better answers for you, and I promise those will all come. And I dive into the draft deeper than anyone locally when it comes to the media. Like, there will be a ton of coverage. I'm excited to get to it.
Another one from Craig Wilson. Darius Bazley looks like he could be on the roster next year. Based on his history, I think he's at least a year behind in his development. He got hurt in OKC and they gave up on him. Was shooting the only reason? And where do you see him fitting with the Jazz next year?
Yeah, shooting is the reason. He can't shoot. I still don't believe he can shoot. But can he play within a team environment? Like, he shot a lot with the Stars. Like, he tried to become the scorer. And the Jazz aren't going to have possessions for him. So can he come in and do what Chris Dunn did, which is just play a bunch of defense, move the ball, occasionally hit an open three, even if he's not a floor spacer, and then get out in transition? Like, those are all pluses for the Jazz. The Jazz don't run at all. Mm-hmm. Like, the Jazz don't get out in transition at all anymore. So if you had a guy who could create havoc defensively, rack up a few steals, great. He's huge. Like, I didn't realize how big he had gotten. And some of this is when you draft a kid when he's 19, like you did with Darius Bazley, and you don't see him again until he's 24 because he didn't play a lot at Oklahoma City. Then where is he? Like, Detroit? Like, I can't remember all the stops he's made now. You see him when he's a man now. It's like, okay, well, he's an adult, and he's huge, and he can actually guard three positions, including the four, and maybe even some small fives in the NBA. That's a lot more valuable than the kid who came in and could jump out of the gym when he was 19. So there is some value there. I absolutely could see him being on the roster next season. And outside of, like, yeah, trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo if he demands a trade this offseason, like, one of the things I would say the Jazz should do is just, like, go get a bunch of guys who can play defense.
Yep.
And have a lineup next year where you can have, I know this is gonna sound funny, no shooting on it, but, like, Chris Dunn, Darius Bazley, Taylor Hendricks, a center who can play defense, whether that's Walker Kessler or somebody else. I've mentioned, like, an Isaiah Hartenstein. And then, like, Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know what? The Orlando Magic won 47 games this year doing that. They're going to maybe have home court advantage in the first round. And I'm not saying start those guys.
Yeah.
But they have a bunch of dudes who play defense. They have one guy who can really score the ball. And they make your life hell for 48 minutes. Like, have a lineup that can come in and set the tone defensively for 10 minutes a game, 5 minutes a game. And then you can sprinkle those guys in and out so you always have a couple of good defenders on the team that have length. So absolutely, I could see him being a part of the roster next season. Would I guarantee it? No, but it's like 50-50, and that's a good spot if you find that guy with a non-guaranteed contract in whatever February or March when they signed him.
Honestly, best case scenario and something that I kind of see in Bazley a little bit is Derrick Jones Jr. Derrick Jones Jr. is like a 31% three-point shooter. And he's just a great defender, and he's in the rotation for the Mavericks who are in the playoffs.
And you know what? Ironically, like, the reason why Darius Bazley might not be on the roster next season is because the Jazz sign Jones.
Yeah.
Like, he could just be on the team next year. Like, that's the type of free agent the Jazz are going to go after. Or maybe you don't. And you know what? Like, a lot of Jazz fans have been like, oh, I love Ron Holland. Like, Ron Holland's Darius Bazley.
Yeah.
Like, that. Get ready for Darius Bazley 2.0. That's who he is. Like, maybe he becomes a scorer, but he's a non-shooter. He's got some weird offensive stuff and has a crazy motor and great length. Well, I've got Darius Bazley for you. He's sitting here for free if you want him, and he will sign with you for 3 years at the veteran minimum. Maybe Ron Holland's better than that. He's 18. I'm not going to write him off.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the potential for the types of players you're picking at the top of the draft as well when there's that many question marks.
Last question here from Jazz Time Jones. If Utah packages all picks in 2024 together, how many spots would that move them up as things stand today? Two spots, maybe?
Let's see. Let's say they finish eighth. Could they get up to sixth with those types of picks? I'm trying to. The reason I'm asking this is, like, who is in front of the Jazz that would want to just add lots of picks? Like, maybe Toronto. Toronto would have to hold on to their pick, which is funny. You would be trading Toronto's pick back to them,
yeah,
which they already traded for Kelly Olynyk. But maybe. And if they can add the 32nd pick, like, maybe. Thing is, I think Danny Ainge likes picks.
Yes.
Like, that's the only issue, is I'd be like, I think Danny Ainge just likes to have a bunch of them. But Portland's going to be flush with picks going forward. Spurs, I think, want to add a top tier talent to play with Wemby, unless they trade out altogether and get a Trae Young or a Donovan Mitchell or somebody like that. I think they're going to be interesting to see what they do this offseason. I don't think Charlotte needs it. Memphis definitely doesn't need it.
Yeah.
Now, Memphis, one thing they have done well, when we just mentioned, is, like, they are hitting grand slams with their late first-round picks. They have done that a lot recently, and it's one of the reasons why they've been so relevant and continue to get better, is they have drafted the Desmond Baines of the world, et cetera, and just done a nice job late. Maybe if they really valued, like, adding a 28th pick and a 32nd pick, and they said, man, we know this guy's going to be there. We're gonna kill everybody by making this selection. Maybe. That would be the team I'd keep an eye on. But again, that's probably one spot.
Yeah.
And are you trading two picks for one spot? I don't think so. Especially in a draft that by now we generally have some sense of tiers. Like, we knew last year the tier at this point already, Victor, Scoot, Brandon Miller.
Yep.
Maybe Amen Thompson was in that conversation, but like, we were talking about Cam Whitmore all summer. He went 20th. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, but we had some sense of tiers. This year, like, there are 10 guys legitimately being mentioned as the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to draft workouts where some of these kids at 10 might be like, oh man, came in and just shot the heck out of the ball in our workout. That kid is absolutely the number one overall pick. Like Stephon Castle or any of these guys that we've seen recently. So we could absolutely see that. So this probably in the draft, I'm all that worried about moving up unless you're like, Reed Sheppard, he's going to go fourth, got to have the fourth pick. I know he's the guy. Everyone else is a huge question mark. Going to move up and draft him.
I'm trying to think, like, when was the last draft that there was so many people being mentioned for the top pick? I know in 2022 it was like, oh, it could be Paolo, could be Jabari Smith, but I feel like it hasn't been this all
no,
over the
really,
place.
It is, I want to say 2013. I want to say the 2013 NBA draft, which is when Giannis was the pick and Rudy Gobert, like, Anthony Bennett stunned everybody by going number one. He was projected like sixth going into that night. Victor Oladipo went second. Otto Porter went third. I mean, Cody Zeller and Alex Zen went fourth and fifth. And again, there's a very realistic chance this is the draft we're looking at.
Yep.
Like, it could be this bad again. I will remember personally, everyone was talking about Ben McLemore in that draft being the number one pick. Like, he was the favorite. He was at Kansas, super athletic, kind of one of those guards that does all those things, and then went seventh.
Yep.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is actually a great player. He went ninth in that pick. Was a bust for Detroit. Wasn't good. And has now been the starting shooting guard on two championship teams. And it took 10 years for him to get there. But he is there now. So, you know, yeah, it's a gamble. But that was the last time I really remember, like, no idea who's going to go one, much less two, much less three, much less four.
Yep.
Like, we just had absolutely no idea. And then players like Trey Burke had a great run in March and jumped up into the top 10 and the Jazz picked him. And CJ McCollum beats Duke in the tournament and ends up as a top 10 pick. It's just like bizarre.
Yep.
This kid playing the third level Greek league that was a great body, but didn't know anything about. It's like, yeah, probably, but no one got his medicals. And he ends up being the 15th pick and is, you know, one of the 20 greatest players in NBA history. It's where we are, unfortunately. I wish there were more answers. But kind of interesting in that situation, because we're talking about the Jazz also having picks here. Looking at, like, picks 25, let's say 24, just because it fits my narrative, down to, like, 35. Okay, all of a sudden there's some interesting players that got picked there that made the NBA and were actually pretty good. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. is still in the NBA and is making $25 million a year. Rudy Gobert was the 27th overall pick in that draft. Alan Crabb was around for a long time in the NBA, played for seven seasons. Like, okay, there's actually going to be some guys late in that first round still where you hit. And as we mentioned, the Jazz hit really well with Rudy Gobert at the 27th overall selection. Like, that's why still having that value there and having those picks is valuable.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Jazz Notes podcast. Like we said, last in-season episode. To look forward to in the next couple weeks, we're going to do recaps of every player's seasons. We might group them by rookies or something else. We'll let you know as that comes about. And also probably going to do some postseason awards.
Postseason awards and getting some pre-draft stuff, which is, I know, what the Jazz fans are so interested in. And I want to talk about the playoffs and how it impacts the Jazz, because there's a lot there to look at. Subscribe. As always, leave us a review if you'd like to, and read us at kslsports.com. We'll be back next week.